Welcome to the Soul Traveler Podcast, an exploration of conscious living with your host, Jennifer Mitchell of The Soul Experience. Join Jennifer as she explores the quantum realms of the subconscious mind and all aspects of spirituality. Driven by curiosity and a thirst for knowledge, topics will stretch the boundaries of your imagination and revive your mind, body, and soul.
Hello, Soul Travelers. Welcome back to another exciting episode. I'm your host, Jennifer Mitchell, and today I am joined by Ray Catania, who is a metaphysical teacher, master certified life coach, and an award-winning author. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Jennifer, thank you so much. I'm honored and grateful to be here with you today.
Yes, it's such a pleasure to have you on. I'm so glad to finally be able to connect with you. Where are you calling from today?
New York. Actually,
oh, I love New York. Are you in the city or?
No, we're just outside the city, actually. We live in New Jersey, but we're probably a stone throw away from New York. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. But if I had it my way, I would be way out in the middle of nowhere with nothing but trees and maybe a lake or something like that. But we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. New York is definitely a busy place. I love it, but I can only handle it for very short time.
Yeah. And I'll guess it's the same as me. It's the energies that are bouncing off you and you start to feel like a ball in a ping pong tournament, you know, and it's just like you're feeling everybody's energy and you're like, oh my God, this is just get me out of here. You know, I need to hug a tree.
Yeah, I always felt like when I go there, and I've been there quite a few times, I feel like I'm in everybody's way. Right. Like everyone's like pushing and like, you're out of the way. It's always how I felt there.
Yeah.
I'd love if you could start off by telling listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I'm an author and I've recently written my second book in the Awakening series. The first one was called The Atheist in the Afterlife. And I kind of refer to this one as my transition, if you will. It's the story of how I went from not believing in anything, being chosen atheism as my belief in nothing, and becoming awakened through a series of events that, whether I wanted them or not, they were going to be there and they were going to make it so. I mean, it was just, it was an incredible ride, an incredible journey. And I tried to write the book in a way, it is written in a way where you're coming with me because it's literally from my journal as the events would happen, I would write about them. The second book is You're Still Alive, Now Act Like It. And that's where I kind of take the information that I learned. I went back to school for metaphysics, as you just mentioned. I had a series of mentors. I've read everything from Eckhart Tolle, Joe Dispenza, also all the great physicists, because I'm very interested in the science. Being a metaphysicist, I like the science behind the spirituality. You know, when you can put those two together, you can justify, I guess, if you're into the science side of it and you need that justification like I do, then it's really mind blowing when you can put that together. So the second book kind of takes you through my overwhelming spiritual awakening, my ego fracture, partial dissolution. I'll never say complete dissolution. I'm not perfect. I got a long way to go. Mm-hmm. Trust me. I'm a work in progress. I always will be. But that's the basis of the second book, is to help others to be able to help themselves in the same way that I did. So it gives you examples of exactly what transpired in my life, the science behind it, and what you can do to replicate it.
So many questions about what you just said. Without giving away too much details about your book, because I want people to buy the book and read it, do you think that you would have come to the point where you are in life spiritually had these things not occurred in your life, or had these trauma situations — I'm assuming it's trauma, it's usually what cracks this open spiritually — had not occurred to you?
It's mostly trauma, in fact. And it's amazing you say that, because I have said that so many times. So from childhood, I didn't have a pleasant one. I'll just say it like that. And there was a lot of anger and a lot of trauma. And even as I went into my teens and my 20s, you know, I would replicate that myself, because that's what I knew. I knew chaos. I knew it very well. And when we're taught that at a young age, we were programmed that way. And we carry that with us, or I'll speak for myself. I carry that with me. And I tried to up the ante all the time. I would put myself in more and more dangerous situations, eventually, you know, leading up to an NDE where I actually did die. I had a lot of close calls. And in those close calls, there was always someone or something that gave me the advice that I needed to get out of the situation, no matter how bad it was, no matter what the state of the situation was. And there was a few times when I just thought, okay, I'm going to wait to die. I'm here. This is it. I put myself here. I'm going to die. And that's that. And I call it the blue voice. Somebody asked me how to describe the voice, and I said, it's a blue voice. I know that doesn't make any sense to anybody, but it's a blue voice for what it's worth. And that voice I know is my guide, and that's my primary guide. And he or she, I can't tell you, I don't know. They don't, and that level, there's no more physical structure. So I have no clue as to, he, male or female, but that being has told me even in the worst time. So I'll give you an example. I worked for some nasty people and who are involved in some activity, criminal activity, and people are shooting each other, and I'm in a bar and I'm hiding under the bar and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get out of there. And the voice says, side door.
Yeah.
And I look over and I'm like, yeah, but they're going to see me if I go through the side door. But an overwhelming feeling of, this is what's right. This is what you must do. So I got up. I went out the side door. I went down the corridor. I went out the next door, and my car was right there, and I never parked there. In the years that I had worked there, I never parked there ever, but I did that night and I got out of there. Another time I almost drowned. I was way, I was like 10 years old, and I was just going further and further out away from shore in the ocean. I guess the undertow was just sucking me back and back. And I would try to swim forth and it would pull me back. Lifeguard's not paying attention. My father's looking at me like, just swim it out. Come on. You know, like, tough, right? You know, this guy's in the Navy. He's not coming in to save me. Are you kidding me? I'm going under. So I start to panic and I start to go under, and there's the voice. And the voice says, swim on an angle, relax, take your time. Doesn't matter how long it takes to get there. And that's exactly what I did. So I calmed down, because for me to calm down is a big deal, because no one calms down in where I come from. It just revs up.
Yeah, escalates.
Exactly. So I calm down and I just listen and I do exactly what the voice tells me to do. And I swam diagonally, and obviously I made it. I got to shore. And then I was, I don't know how far down. I was very far down at that point. And I had to walk all the way back by myself. And I guess the lesson here was that listen to the voice. It always knows what's right. Why it's there, why me, no clue. I have absolutely no idea. I'm not special. I'm just a regular person. But what I think I did when I was very, very young was I learned how to tap in to that realm by wanting to exit my body during the traumatic moments. Now, this is something you mentioned, and you probably understand this. When you're in a situation that's horrendous and you don't want to be there, your mind can leave your body, right? It's transportable. It's not connected to the body. We can remove it. Most people don't know that, but you can. You can have an out-of-body experience. You can do it yourself. Now, most of us get pushed to do that through a traumatic experience. But once you do it and you realize you can do it, you start to, it opens up other realms of existence that you can visit and you can meet, and you can start to do things that others would think you're nuts, to say the least.
Yeah, I think people are definitely coming around, though, becoming more aware of these philosophies and concepts and abilities. I'd like to go back and touch on something that you said about the blue voice and how you hear this voice. And so in my line of work, I do quantum hypnosis. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. So under deep hypnosis, I connect people to that realm, the realm, you know, beyond this one. And there's a part inside of each and every one of us that actually resides there, whether it's called, you know, subconscious, higher self, the soul, oversoul. We live there, a part inside of us. And so under hypnosis, I tap into that. And that realm we also connect with our guides, loved ones. It's really common that they will come through and they say, I'm always giving you advice. I'm always here with you. And they will come through. My clients will actually channel their guides and they come through and they speak. It's real interesting. So when you talk about that blue voice, one thing that kind of stuck out is I had a session once with a client where she had to pick this color. And it was like orange or green or blue was a color. And you pick this color and she pulled it into her soul and like the lifetime. It was real interesting. So when you said blue voice, it made me think about that session and how interesting that was. And it became like her soul color or something like that. So wow. I was wondering if that's connected. And it was one of the most fascinating sessions. And I was like, what is the purpose of this color? And she's like, it's going to be my soul color. The only color I can't choose is white. We're not allowed to pick white.
That's interesting. I didn't get a choice. It was, that's what it was. But yeah, that's really, really cool. Do you think that there's any possibility that we are actually our own guide?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. I think that there's multiple possibilities. I think that oftentimes our higher self, subconscious, that part of us that resides in that three-dimensional realm is our own guide. And then I do also think that when we have loved ones who pass, that they also are by our side as well. I encounter both. I really do. When my clients, when we're talking with that part of them, you know, the subconscious that resides in that realm, they'll often say, I'm sending the messages. They don't listen to me. I hear it all the time. They never listen to me. That's me. I'm trying to guide them. I'm trying to tell them this or that, but they ignore. They don't trust me. So I do think it's actually a combination of both. I really do. And how I know that we're connecting with that fifth dimension, I guess we'll just call it, is because when we ask a time-based question, if I say, where's Ray going to be in 6 months?
Yeah, there's no time. Exactly.
Doesn't understand. It'll say, I don't understand. There's no time here. And that's how I really know that we're connecting in a different time and space. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. And I did start to realize that I had mediumship abilities shortly thereafter, especially after the NDE, because that just opened up a whole other level of people, for lack of a better word, coming to me and wanting to talk, right? And I remember I was 20 when I had my NDE. So I was like 22 when I moved out and I got my first bachelor pad, quote unquote. And I thought it was going to be really cool and I was going to have parties all the time, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. None of that happened because every time I went home, it felt like the place was filled with people and there were energies just bouncing off the walls. And I could see the line shooting across the room and I could feel the difference in the vibrations in my body. And oh God, they would keep me up all night. And the electrical, anything electrical, they love to play with electricity, right? So it was just, it was a nightmare. I mean, it was, I was like, and I'm trying to remain an atheist. I'm like, I don't believe in you. Please go home. Don't you understand? I don't think you're real. But eventually broke me down. So you know what I did? I moved out of that place. I told my friend, I said, I think this place is haunted. And the phone went click. I called him back and I said, why'd you hang up on me? He goes, I didn't hang up on you. I said, well, anyway, what I was explaining to you is the place is haunted. Click. All right. Okay. I get the message. So I moved out in 10 months. I had a 12-month lease and I moved out in 10 and I went to another place and the same exact thing happened.
Oh boy.
So Ray's haunted. It's not the house. It's me. Ray. Wherever I go, I could sit in the middle of nowhere. They're coming, right? So I had to try to like find a way to box this up and deal with it. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't do that well because I didn't have a professional helping me. I didn't have any knowledge of this. I didn't know what it was. Certainly, I grew up Catholic, so there was no one to talk to, no one that would have entertained this for so much as a moment. So I thought I was losing my mind and I turned to drugs and alcohol really, really bad because it was the only way I could sleep. It was the only way I could turn them off. And that went on for years and years and years, all the way until I got married and I had two kids. And when I realized my responsibility to these two beautiful humans that I had to take care of them. I had to get out of the chaotic life. I went back to college, got a real job, went to rehab and just lived like quote unquote normal life. And I learned how to keep the beings at bay by just shutting them down, you know, not ever speaking with them, not ever dealing with them. They'll give up eventually if you push back enough. Right. So that I wind up divorced like maybe 2 or 3 years later. And many, many, many years goes by before I start dating again. And one of the times, the last time, I was probably 40, late 40s. And I decided to go online because that's how you meet people now.
Yeah.
And I see a woman and I say, that's her. And I just know that's my wife. Wow. So I join the site and I email her and I tell her this. I said, you don't know me. My name's Ray. You're my wife. I know you don't understand what I'm saying, but if you email me back, I'll explain everything. So yeah, she's going to think I'm nuts, but whatever. But she actually thought it was funny. And she was like, who the hell are you? You know, we started talking and today we're married and we live in this house. But that's it. I sent one email and I told her, you're the only email I'm sending. I have no interest in anybody else. You're my wife. That's that. And so when I met her, what came with her was this man who he was forefront, like right in the movie screen, right? That opens up and you see, you're kind of like looking at a screen. It feels like you're kind of like watching a movie. So this man would come into my screen front and center and he would say the same thing over and over and over. I effed up. I made a mistake. You can help her. I cannot. I don't know who he is. I don't know what that means. All I know is I keep seeing it from morning to night.
And Still, you see it?
All day long. It's after I meet her, a couple of weeks in, we start getting a little bit serious and the conversation comes up. She goes, so what are your spiritual beliefs? And I said, I have no idea. Mm. I've been meaning to get around to that, but I honestly don't know. And she goes, well, you know, for your birthday, I'm going to get you a spiritual clearing. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. Whatever that
is. You're thinking like you're the one who needs a clearing.
She's buying it for me. I don't know what that is. And I'm like, okay, well, so we're going to have cake, right? There'll be cake. I don't know. I'll take the spiritual thing and some cake. All right, I'm good. And she's like, you don't have to be there. You can be at your office. Doesn't matter. You could be at work. Now, at this time, I'm doing well. I'm at the top of my game. I'm running a company in real estate. I'm doing really well. And she calls me, the woman who's going to do the clearing or healing. I think it's called the clearing for that particular thing. And she tells me she's going to start. Don't have any appointments on your schedule. You might feel a little woozy afterwards. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, right.
Yeah.
2 hours later, I'm wobbly. I'm literally like woozy. And I call her back and I was like, okay, so what'd you do? Because I'm like little, my thoughts are just kind of like all over the place. And she goes, just relax. It'll go away. It'll settle. She goes, you had a lot of stuff and we moved a lot of things around and you're going to feel great in 2 days. And I was like, oh, okay. So, but then it was like 2 days later that here comes the man, because now he's got a clear channel to me, clear path. So this starts on a Friday, the guy, and he's saying that same sentence. It's like an 8-second video loop, keeps going around and around. By Saturday, he's doing it twice as much. By Sunday, it's 3 times as much. And when I'm in a store, this is when I break. I'm in a store and I'm paying for my stuff. And I guess I froze because I'm watching this. And the lady says to me, are you okay, sir? And I said, no, I'm not okay. So I went out to my car and I was really, really depressed because I'm like, okay, my life is over. I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind. This is it. I got to get my affairs in order. I got to make sure my kids are taken care of. I got to check this box, check that box. And I'm not going to go back to drugs and alcohol to turn this off. So I got to get some help. Now, the woman I'm dating just happens to be a doctor of psychology and neuropsychology.
What are the chances?
What are the chances, right? Okay. Okay, universe. Thanks. So I'm like, I guess I'll ask her, but of course she's going to run for the hills. I figure she's going to give me a doctor's name and be like, you call this person and never call me again, right?
Yeah.
But remember now, this is the one who bought me a spiritual clearing. So when I went to her and I explained this to her, the response I actually got was, you know what? That's probably my dad. And I was like, what? Your deceased father who died in 1990? And she's like, yeah, he comes through a lot. I see mediums and he comes through and they all tell me he's like a powerhouse. He goes front and center. And I was like, front and center? That's the way I'm seeing this. And I said, but it doesn't look like him because I saw that picture, you know, the one on the mantle. And She's like, that picture is very, very old. He was young there. He was 20 pounds lighter. He had no beard, no mustache, no, you know, this guy I saw was like stocky, beard, mustache, thick black hair. So she goes through her phone and shows me a photo. And I said, you know that guy? He's been with me for 3 days, driving me nuts, that son of a bee. Right. And she goes, that's my dad, silly. And I was like, well, he effed up. He made a mistake. I can help her. He can't. And then it dispersed. It was gone. That was like a weight off my shoulders. I delivered the message and he was gone. That's all I had to do. Now, of course, she had to figure out what the message meant, who it was for, yada, yada, yada. It turned out to be a very, very serious thing. There was someone in the family that would have passed away had we not dealt with it, but we had to piece that together over time, multiple messages from him. That's why he was so persistent. It was a matter of life and death. Can you imagine my first, you know, real interaction at, where I have to acknowledge I'm a medium, right? And it's a matter of life and death. I mean,
I can't even imagine any of this.
You can't make this stuff up.
I don't have leadership skills. I mean, trying to navigate all of this and coming into the power, and you have this spirit that's coming through with these messages, must have been very overwhelming to go through.
I thought it was the end of my life. I had my will was done. I'm preparing for the end. A DNR I give to my brother. I'm like, here, make sure they don't resuscitate me this time. I don't want to come back. So anyway, she takes me to meet one of her mediums. And she's like, just sit with her and talk to her and compare notes. Right. And you guys can figure out if this is real or whatever it is. She's basically pacifying me to get me in there. And I'm like, okay. And I don't know. So if it's not real, then I'm crazy. Right. And then if it's real, well, then what do I do with it? So it's kind of like a lose-lose the way I see it in that moment. But I go in to see her and I explain the different ways that I see things because they're not all the same. Mm-hmm. There's different ways. And she's like, I explain the vibration and then what I see in the movie screen and yada, yada, yada. I get into all that. And she's like, stop. That's exactly the way I see it. She goes, you're getting visits from the other side. You're a medium, which is pretty crazy because there's not too many guys that can do this. Mm-hmm. And then I told her about a premonition that I had. And she goes, you're also a psychic. And I hate that word, but she's like, you're also psychic. And then I gave her a third one. She's like, okay, so you've got all the abilities, right? And you're a man, which is kind of crazy. And I was like, okay. Which I get because, you know, we can do like one thing at a time and our mind is very focused on one item and we're not, we don't have that ability. We don't. And I'll be the first one to admit it, right? My wife can do 46 things. I could do two. That's it. And I could chew gum, walk, I'm good. So, but anyway, it was real, I guess. I walked out of there knowing that it was legit. And she took me under her wing and became my first mentor. Thank God, because she like saved my life. She really did. I really, really, I'll never forget her. Since then, I've had other mentors and I was very, very lucky to meet my second mentor, who was one of the top mentors who's worked with a lot of the people that you kind of see on TV and they've written books and stuff like that. He doesn't want to do TV. He doesn't want to be even known, but he's the guy behind the people and he teaches them and he's worked for the government. He's worked for the FBI. He's worked for the police. So did she actually. So I had some pretty good people and there were, so here's the story of how I meet him. So we go away for my birthday, right? Here it is, my birthday again. Something's
your birthday happening again. Again.
Always. I can't wait for my birthday because it's like life changing every year. So this birthday, we go away. And when she saw that particular medium, he drew her father because he's a spirit artist. He can also draw somebody. So he drew him and she just happened to bring the picture because she found it and brought it on the vacation and showed it to me. And I said, that's exactly how I see him in that shirt. It was a very distinct shirt because it was an older shirt from that era of time that somebody would wear. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's it. That's exactly the way I see your dad. That is so crazy. Now I have to meet this guy. So we opened up the laptop and I started to type it in and his website comes up right on the front of the website. We are now accepting applications for a 2-year mentorship. The deadline to apply is February 15th. That's my birthday. So I spent that weekend filling out the application, sent it in. Then he sends back like a booklet essay questions. It's like a telephone book. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I filled everything out because he's not talking to you until he's convinced you're legit. You can tell the difference between this, and this. And I was really like, I was kind of blown away. And then when I resubmitted my second app, I heard nothing. And I was like, all right, so maybe it was a fluke or whatever. It's not really that real and blah, blah, blah. So I just happened to send an email to his assistant just to see what was up. And she's like, listen, there's hundreds of people that applied. So bear with us. I don't know which one you are, but just hang in there. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, no problem. I never had so much of a hard time giving someone my money. And this goes to show you the integrity of this man. Mm-hmm. He had hundreds of people that were willing to give him thousands of dollars to be a mentor of his. There were 11 of us that made it. I was one of 11 and I knew the least. Like everybody else in there like was working doing this. And I was like, I don't even know what the terminology there. I don't know what a sitter is. Okay. I know nothing. So I was like a baby to the program, but it just came naturally. So anyway, I was very, very lucky to have him. And he taught me all kinds of things, not just about mediumship, but about spirituality, things that I built on, things that I've used to come to crack my ego, to just deal with everyday life. He's been a complete inspiration to me all the way around. And it's been an amazing ride. It's just been incredible.
That's amazing. You got so lucky that you found two great mentors in your life.
Yeah.
So along your journey, what led you to merge science and spirituality into your practice, into your teachings? I love science.
So it started where I watched this show on quantum physics and I was like so amazed and I started to see how you could take the subatomic world and how it relates to our world and how that relates to the spiritual realm, which is all energy, and energy is what's inside the atom. And it's like, we come back full circle. And I'm like, wait, there's something here, right? All these things that we can't somehow figure out. How are we talking to dead people? Where are they? I started to put my own theories together using other people's theories. So I have this theory in my first book of where we go when we die. And I don't mean like heaven or hell, or fourth realm, fifth realm. I mean, like physically, where is it that you go? And I'm trying to figure this out. And I learned the first law of thermodynamics, which states no new energy can be created. Energy is always transferred from one form to another. It can never cease to exist and it can never, no new energy can be made. I mean, I know I'm not saying that perfectly, but that's paraphrasing. So we have this energy that is our consciousness, right? Which can also be spirit, soul, it's the life energy that lives within us. And when we die, this energy has to go somewhere because the first law of thermodynamics says so. Not because any religion tells you that, because it's scientific. So where does it go? Well, I started thinking and I watched this whole thing on the cosmos and Einstein's theory of dark energy that's pushing the universe out when it really should come in. And Hubble helped him to prove that there was dark energy in the universe. So I'm like, well, here's an energy that we don't know where it comes from. And here's an energy that we don't know where it goes. And it's the only two that we don't know. So I was like, couldn't these go together? Couldn't that be the realm? Because it's dark. We can't see it. It's not dark like it's evil. It's just dark. We cannot see it. But I know it's right here. I know it's right next to me. I know I can put my hand and I'm putting my hand through somebody, but I can't see them, right? I mean, maybe I can, but you know what I mean? Not all of them. Yeah, I know what you mean. So it just seemed to make sense to me. So I was like, I just kind of like put two and two together. And then after that, I just looked more and more to see what I can find. I wanted to break down the law of attraction. And I figured out that, you know, when we think our thoughts, we put them into a visual. That visual is transmitted into a frequency. That frequency is sent out. And the same way our cell phones work, if I dial your number, my cell phone adapts to your frequency of your cell phone, and that's why yours rings and we can talk. So the law of attraction works the same way. You can't tell me that our minds can't do what our cell phones can do, because that's crazy. We can emit a thought, turn it into a visual, send it out, and wait for the like vibration to come back to us. And that was one of the things my mentors told me too. He's like, you're always fighting. You spent your whole life fighting to get things. He goes, why don't you just be the fisherman? Instead of trying to swim upstream all the time to get the better fish, why don't you just stand still, let the fish come down the hill and pick out the ones you like, and let the ones you don't like go past you? And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to do that. And then I had to learn how to make that happen. And I did. And I repeated it again and again. And then I figured out how it worked. And then it goes in the book. Because if I don't have a scientific theory and I can't replicate it, I can't put it in the book, because I can't prove it. I don't have anything behind it. So I don't feel like I can put it in the book. And I also have to be able to replicate. I don't know if I did this with every single thing in the first book, but I definitely did it with every single thing in the second. But that was my goal. So everything that's in there has what I feel to be a plausible scientific theory that's associated with whatever the concept may be. So if I'm my own biggest skeptic and I just put myself in other people's shoes, if you read it, you would be like, oh yeah, because you know the concepts. So you're familiar with them, right? But if you take somebody who's never heard of these things and you say, here, use the law of attraction, they're going to be like, okay, you're nuts and I'm not reading your book. And they're going to close it and toss it back. So, but when you give them what's behind it and how it works and how simple it is, like a satellite dish to a radio, they get it. And they're like, wow, it's like that easy. And I'm like, yeah. I needed 10 grand for my kids' college and I got it in 24 hours. Do you want to know how I did it? Yeah. And they say, yeah. And that's what I do in my coaching, is I just simply teach people these things and they use them and they work and they come back and their lives are changed. And
you touched on something that I was going to ask you about, and that was skepticism. So I mean, as a medium, you probably encounter a lot of skepticism. So how do you handle that?
Well, with mediumship, it's a lot more difficult. Here's the thing. So I don't practice mediumship professionally, like for money ever. It's not because of that. It's because it takes its toll on me. I can't get the person, because of quantum entanglement, right? Their energy is entangled with my energy. And because they have to literally have their energy within me so much for me to have that message come through, I feel what they feel for hours. And a lot of times that's regret, remorse, feelings I don't want to feel. And they I have to go by myself afterwards, like after class when I do read, I have to go and be alone for a couple hours. So I'm out with my kids and I can just be emotional. And I just had my real awakening. I just like got rid of my anger and got rid of my sadness and got rid of these things. And I don't want to have those feelings again, even though I know it means so much to somebody else. I respect the people who do it so much because I see their pain. So many people drop out of my class and then they come back and they drop out and they come back because it's emotionally, it's very taxing, very taxing. I respect them for doing it, but I cannot. I can't. I want to be happy. I went the first half of my life, you know, violence and trauma. Now I want to like enjoy it a little bit. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I kind of think I earned it.
I don't actually blame you. I feel like if I had those gifts, I probably would it would be like the same for me. I can imagine how draining physically, emotionally that would be.
So there's sometimes when the message is beautiful and you feel that beauty and it's wonderful, but there's a lot of times I have to see a lot of very bad things that affect me, and it's hard to do. And so I had to separate myself for a while from that. I'm actually going to go back to class this Saturday. It's going to be the first time in months that I'm going to go back because I just miss those guys so much. But I don't think I'm going to practice. I'll probably exit before the practice part. But what I'm trying to do for people now is the second book is to evoke some or anybody's spiritual awakening by just repeating the things that I did. You don't have to be a medium to have a spiritual awakening, and you don't have to be a medium to have that happiness that's inside of you, which is really where our happiness lies, not It's not external, it's internal. And I'm sure you know that. And let it break free and just emit from within instead of us trying to take it in from outside, which is where we think happiness is, you know, new cars or this or that or a drink or whatever. That's all nonsense. Real, true contentment and happiness is here. And when you emit it outward, that's when you get more of it, because now you're attracting more of it to you and life changes in that moment. And I've had that moment and I want to stay there.
Yeah. Ray, I could talk to you all day. I've learned so much in our conversation. It's been great having you on the show. I'd love if you can share it with listeners, where they can connect with you, drop your socials, your website. Where can listeners find you?
So you can always find me at raycatania.com or limitlesspublications.com. And there, from either one of those websites, you can find the books. You can interact with me if you're looking for coaching. You can contact me about any speaking events or anything at all that you want to know about me or more about me or my books. Please, raycatania.com or limitlesspublications.com. Thank you. Thank you for asking that.
Absolutely. And I'll make sure to link everything in the notes for our listeners today. Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Final thoughts. Well, the second book is You're Still Alive, Now Act Like It. And I think that I entitled it that because I think we should live every day like it's our last, because there's so much to do. There's so much we want to do and we tend to not do it. Just do it. Go out and live your dreams. And if you want to quit your job and pursue something, just do it. Don't even think about it. Everything's going to be fine. It's always going to be fine. Follow your dreams. Follow your love. It will be fine. You will be fine. And that's it. Just live life. Live every moment of your life.
Yeah. And I have to agree with that. I wasn't happy in my career at one point and I left and I'm still here. I'm still alive.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it's been lovely chatting with you and I'd love to have you back anytime.
I would love that. Thank you, Jennifer. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And listeners at home, thank you for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
This podcast is brought to you by The Soul Experience, Quantum Healing Hypnosis. Are you ready to embark on an inward journey of quantum healing? Quantum Healing Hypnosis is the most profound method of inner work and self-healing someone can do while on a spiritual path. In a single session, you experience past life regression, exploration between lifetimes, self-healing performed by your subconscious, release of trapped trauma, and answers to your most important life questions. Your higher self has a message for you and is here to help you and guide you on this life journey. Book a session today with Jennifer Mitchell at thesoulexperiences.com.